Stop trying to make Meta happen, Gretchen.
It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 28th day of October 2021. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific, all time zones in between and the great globe around. Hi, I'm Robin. And we missed prayer meeting Wednesday, but here it is, thorn in the side Thursday. It's blowing my mind. Agnes and I will be taking off on Monday morning, and I don't mean in a plane. I mean leaving in an automobile. Birmingham bound, about 5 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Can't believe it's happening. But anyway, if you pop by the chat room right now, you will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, is eschewing the folding of space to become Man Cave for the time being, and he is capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Ah, Sparky's got a sore foot. I wouldn't want to fold space with a sore foot either, Sparky. I hope it gets feeling better very, very soon indeed. Steve, keep them fingers crossed. We're one game apiece with the awful, hated Astros. Braves looked great in Game 1 of the World Series. Yeah. Yep, we are split. And, you know, let's go ahead and just sweep all three at home there in Atlanta and end the series nice and quick with as little drama as possible. Oh, devoutly to be wished. But hail the gang's, well, getting here. And, of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. That means we send out thanks both for our 28th day of the month subscribers and our 27th day of the month subscribers because, well, of course, there was no program yesterday because I had speech therapy down in Huntington, and I'm in the process of learning how to make my... How to make my voice a little less of a clocking thing. But regardless, thanks go out to Randy in PA and to Suman. Thank you both. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Sharon. Thanks so very much indeed to our buddy Robert in Australia. Thank you so kindly to our friend David jumping in. Thanks, everyone, for being part of the happy little band that keeps this program on the air and has made independent liberal broadcasting a reality for almost two decades. Absolutely, absolutely amazing to contemplate. And with that having been said, well, we've got a lot to work on in terms of ending ending October to the good. Along those lines, I had a note. And again, thank you, David. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, all of our subscribers. I had a note from our dear friend Rico earlier. And by the way, I'm so glad that everybody, I had a number of notes from people who got a kick out of the Best Of broadcast last night. Brother Deacon Asa dug deep into the into the archives and came up with one from, I think, 2013, which is just wild. And people enjoyed the heck out of it. So anyway, Rico says, "Hey, Robin." "Hey, Rico. So I want to put up a $300 challenge for Thursday and carry it over to Friday if it's not met on Thursday. It would be great if it was met today, though. It takes courage to do what you've done," Rico says. "You could have easily hidden who you are until you died, but instead decided to come out as yourself. As a gay man who grew up in rural Western PA in the 70s, I can relate. I have so much respect for you, it's hard to put into words. As far as your surgery, you'll be fine. I worked for urology surgeons who did robotic procedures, and they said the recovery time was less than open surgery with fewer complications. And, of course, you have the lovely Agnes to help you. So you're in good hands, my friend. So much love and many best wishes, my friend. Signed, Rico, in the out and proud Berg." Yay. It's beautiful. Thank you, Rico. And so the, I don't know, let's call it the out and proud challenge, courtesy of Rico and the Berg. Spent a lot of time in Western PA. Especially that little corner between Morgantown and Pittsburgh over my college years. It's beautiful country, beautiful country. The back roads from, like, Wheeling to Pittsburgh, you know, it's amazing. You know when you've gone into Pennsylvania without even seeing a welcome to PA sign, because the very land itself or the appearance of the land changes. It's that obvious. You know, one minute cars are up on blocks in front yards, and the next minute everything's clean and tidy and not a blade of grass out of place, and you know that you have left West Virginia and you've entered Pennsylvania. So thank you for the $300 challenge. That is tremendous. So there's $300 floating around out there looking for someone to match it. So that they're, you know, so that your five, your one becomes two, your 5, 10, 10, 20, 20, 40, your 50 becomes 100, your 100 even becomes two, if you want, because it's a have a show on me to get us completely done with October in advance of the final broadcast of this month, of this week, and for at least a couple of weeks. Well, no. There will be, as I said, program note, there will be broadcasts coming up. Probably have a couple of shows next week. And then the following week I'm completely out. Frankly, I'm so exhausted from running around. Appointment for this, appointment for that, appointment. Damn. I thought all I had to do was slap a little makeup and a dress on and I'd be done. No, I'm kidding. I know better. I really did know better. And so, at any rate, I'm working on us having a guest host, especially the week of the week that I'm laid up in the hospital. I had some reassuring news from my surgeon, because, like I said, I'm going to take all y'all. I want everybody to go with me who wants to follow this process. I had thought I was going to have to stop my hormone therapy. And, in fact, no, my doctor's nurse said, No, he said you can stay on it, which is such a relief because you get it's just so icky when you've been on it and then you have to come off of it. Oh, it's awful, nasty. So I get to stay with that. And secondly, with regard to the insurance company who continues to be complete assholes, and we are talking, of course, about Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Pennsylvania, Delaware, and West Virginia. They said, well, okay, well, you know, remember they wanted me to have an outpatient gender surgery? You know, just slap that thing on there and send her on out the door. I mean, what are we talking about anyway? They finally relented, and then they said, no, okay, well, we'll cover 2 days in the hospital, damn it, instead of the 5 that had been requested. And the nurse told me, she said, don't worry, honey, you're not going anywhere on day 3. You're not going to be able to go anywhere. And we will keep you right there, and we will take the best care of you. We know how to take care of you. And meanwhile, the doctor knows how to make his notes and his charts look exactly like they need to look. And you don't worry about the insurance, honey. We will. It was so sweet. They've all been really, really kind. So, yeah, Monday morning, 5 a.m. And what's that line from Rocket Man? Come Tuesday morning, November 9th. And I'm going to be high as a kite by then. Yeah. Cross y'all's fingers, please. Thank you, Ralphs, for getting us started. We are on the way to meeting Rico's Out and Proud and DeBerg Challenge. Thank you. Thank you. And thanks as well to Billable Rick. Billable Rick said, yesterday's throwback show, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to yesterday's show from May 2013. First, the show was hosted by a guy named Bob, whose voice sounds different from Robin's. I wonder who that could have been. Then lady cab driver Tracy called in, and she and Bob had a wonderful conversation. We were then treated with a call from the gone but not forgotten Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, who told us about the latest historical-related books that he'd read. Then Bob discussed stories involving the Minnesota legislature moving toward marriage equality and a Pennsylvania juvenile judge who sold thousands of children down the river for kickbacks from for-profit prisons. Brad and Desi talked about the latest electrical car that the highest consumer satisfaction rating, the Tesla Model S. And to close the program, you had calls with Jim from South Carolina, Bob from North Carolina, and Edward. And like Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, Edward in Texas, gone but not forgotten. What a delightful man he was. They both were. I hope that the latter three gents are doing well, although I haven't heard much from them lately. Edward passed away a few years back, and his loving husband was kind enough to let me know. Lord, I'll never forget the joke he told about. He, like Scott in San Diego, had colorful aunties, and told the story of. It was a little Johnny joke, and yeah. Little Johnny being sent out into the hallway and told to compose a poem for misbehaving. And the teacher called little Johnny back in and said, well, little Johnny, do you have a poem for us? And he said, I do, teacher. Here I stand out in the hall, watching a cockroach crawl up the wall. And she said, little Johnny, that just will not do. We are genteel and decent people, and we do not say cockroach, we say roach. Try it again. He said, all right. Here I stand out in the hall, watching a roach crawl up the wall, without the cock. Still just delights me. So, I don't know, maybe Brother Deacon Asa can make a thing out of digging into the way, way back machine and come up with other little broadcast gems featuring some guy named Bob. Yeah. What's that, Brother Deacon Asa? An actual quote from Edward in formerly of Dallas. My Aunt Edna would mess you up good. Edward, Brother Deacon Asa says, was absolutely priceless. Yeah. looking for a loophole. Thank you, Ralphs. Yeah. And a note coming in from Ron and Raleigh, the Yukon-Cornelius bipartisan bill, because that's been all over the news. Well, it's a great bill. What's in it? Don't know. Yeah. Now that the bipartisan bill has been taken out in back of the Capitol and beaten within an inch of its life, there seems to be a call for a vote. However, your senior senator, you just have to remind me that he's mine, don't you? Doesn't appear to be finished beating it some more. Grandpa Joe, before flying off to Europe, said that everyone can't get what they want. I beg to differ. Igham Foo Manchin seems to be getting everything he wants, and so is Miss Dip Cinema. I like to refer to them as the Manchin Cinema Hellplex. While everyone else is like the little match girl pressing their noses against the glass, looking in, hoping for some table scraps. Little bird with your beak pressed up against the window pane. There is no food for you here. Only death. Wasn't that the poem in like a Happy Days episode where somebody was exploring their beatnik phase? Yeah. The Democratic leadership is touting this piece of crap bill, if we can believe it, as greater than the New Deal and the war on poverty of LBJ. There's a line in my favorite revisionist Western, The Outlaw Josie Wales, when Fletcher's talking to Senator Jim Lang, a real person, by the way. Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining. And that's exactly what's happening. Kyrsten Sinema, a freshman senator, has sidestepped the leader of the Democratic Senate leadership and gone straight to the president. Meanwhile, Igham Foo Joe has kicked Chuck Schumer in the nards and beat the bill into submission. The Progressive Caucus has almost decided to call bullshit on the whole thing. I don't blame them. Won't lose much if they do, but they will deny those two grandstanders their day in the sun. Nothing left in the bill benefits me in the least, so I'm willing to see what comes next. It's not nothing. It's something. It's just that there's not a whole lot of, well, it's like Gertrude Stein said about Oakland, California, her hometown. There's no there. And I don't mean to be a negative Nelly. But goddamn, really? No. None of the stuff that other developed democracies take for granted. I think there'll be a little bit of a boost to the Affordable Care Act. There'll be a pittance for climate change. But nothing ambitious. You know, yeah, I just got pissed, all kinds of pissed off yesterday. I counted one time how many times one crosses the Great Kanawha River when I drive from here to Huntington. And it's like 8 times. The highway wanders back and forth across the Great Kanawha. Of course, the new, primarily the new, not so much the Kanawha, the new river, over which the New River Gorge spans, is the last remnant of the Great Tays River, which once flowed east to west across Pangaea, when we were all one happy continent. And used to be there were amazing things to be found in terms of ancient life, like trilobites in what is still to this day known as Tays Valley, West Virginia. But one of those places where you cross the Great Kanawha is at Nitro, West Virginia. And yeah, that's why it's named Nitro. Years and years and years ago when you'd get down there, it's not nearly so bad as it once was. But God, years and years ago, you'd go down through there, and that was what was then called Chemical Valley. And Lord, it stunk. God, it stunk from all the chemical plants, and people just breathed poison every day of their lives. But I-64 crosses the Great Kanawha River there at Nitro. Big old interstate bridge with a big green superstructure. And you can look to your immediate, to your right as you cross the river westbound and see the John Amos coal-fired power plant. And that's the one of the power plants that this family is personally paying to keep open so that it can continue to belch poison and filth into the air for the purpose of generating electricity. Because, well, Appalachian Power is thoroughly committed to being, if need be, the last power utility burning coal in the United States, even though it would save them whopping loads of money to move into renewable resources like wind and solar, and perhaps, although it is certainly not a bridge fuel, it was touted as such once upon a time, even frack gas would save them money. But no, we're going to be burning coal past 2028 when we know that we've got to get to zero emissions. Well, the scientific consensus was we needed to get to by like 2029, 2030. But thanks to Joe Manchin, that's not going to happen. Once upon a time, they would refer to the senators from the state of Michigan as the senator from General Motors. And back in the day, the senators from General Motors moved heaven and earth to make sure that innovative, life-changing, life-saving things like seat belts didn't go in cars. Well, the senator from Appalachian Power and the coal industry is moving heaven and earth, literally, mountaintop removal, y'all, to make sure that this planet more rapidly becomes inhospitable and uninhabitable to the human species. So I understand Ron and Raleigh's intense frustration, dare I say fury. Randy Radar says, the bill is a limp biscuit. Yeah, that's something. And Ralph says, as to times when we have to be away, yeah, more from the vault, please. I think that's a great idea, and we shall see how that plays out. Now, where to go getting us started with this Thorn in the Side Thursday? I would have had the story for yesterday. Unfortunately, I had to be away. But it still bears mentioning. What's that? Jeremy in Vermont says, May 2013, it was nice to hear a broadcast from the before times. Who would have thought in less than 10 years from that point, one man and a large portion of the political party he controlled with his larger-than-life ass would have brought on a pandemic and made racism a normal thing again. And looking down the barrel at 750,000 dead from said pandemic. And this Bob guy sounds oddly familiar too. Yeah, there's a sort of wistful, semi-mystical sense of we didn't have to wind up here. There was a better future to be had. But, well, we didn't safeguard our democracy, I know. We didn't safeguard democracy, and we let Nitwit Nero into the White House, knowing abs-damn-lutely what would happen. And it happened. And I know, I keep saying it, but I keep saying it for a reason. Y'all, they're going to do it again. Steve in New York says, COP26, I can't wait to see President Biden in Scotland. What exactly is our president supposed to do other than sit there and let the world lecture him? Well, he can always say, hey, it could be a lot worse. You could be listening to Trump. And he may do that. But it appears, based on the reading that I'm doing, that the focus on this meeting in Glasgow will be to, I suppose, harangue China. Because, of course, they are the biggest net polluter on Earth. And while they are bringing lots more wind and solar online, lots more than the United States, in fact, they're also still bringing more coal-fired power plants online. And the barges are leaving Australia and leaving American shores. The vast freighters full of coal and going right to China, where it is burned in about as dirty a fashion as you can burn it, because they don't care, to power an economic juggernaut. So what kind of leverage they can bring to bear on the Chinese, I don't know. But that seems to be the focus, at least, of where the for-profit media thinks the conversation is going to go. Oh, and no, I do have a story that I would have gotten to yesterday. Just 1 second, I gotta respond. And we will get to that story. But there's another one that I saw earlier today that sort of gave me pause. For being, well, it's almost like we were out in front of the curve again. It's not like it. We were out in front of the curve again. In a story from the Washington Post, they report that Judge Beryl A. Howell went prolifically speechifying for an hour in his courtroom. His words being described as a diatribe, also being described as a thrashing of prosecutors. Judge Beryl Howell. Rachel Weiner reported the story. The chief judge presiding over the federal court in Washington on Thursday unleashed a blistering critique. Of whom? No, Stephen New York. Beryl Howell is Thurston's girl. But yeah. Oh, lovey. Our little girl's a judge. No, she's apparently, she is, in court today, she opened up the bag and said, "Behold how empty is my bag of fucks to give." And she laid into federal prosecutors until they probably wished that they had taken their dad's advice and become piano players in a bawdy house instead of lawyers. Ms. Weiner, writing at the Post, describes her rhetoric as fiery. And Judge Howell declared, "No wonder parts of the public in the U.S. are confused about whether what happened on January 6th at the Capitol was simply a petty offense of trespassing with some disorderliness, or a shocking criminal conduct that represented a grave threat to our democratic norms. Let me make my view clear. The rioters were not mere protesters." I think it might have had more starch. I mean, you can always Monday morning quarterback this stuff, or Thursday evening for that matter. And say, maybe it would have been helpful if the Honorable Chief Judge had not referred to them herself as rioters. They were not rioters. We have been beating on this for almost 10 full months, they were insurrectionists. They were attempting to topple the government of the United States of America and install someone as president who was not elected president, didn't get the Electoral College votes, didn't get the popular vote, but they were going to stop the constitutional process. That is why every time I refer to this event, I refer to it as an insurrection against constitutional governance in the United States, the Constitution of the United States, and in fact, the seat of constitutional governance and the elected representatives thereof. It was the first time that Judge Howell herself had sentenced one of the insurrectionists, and she did not much care for the dainty kid gloves with which the particular rioter in front of her, Jack Jesse Griffith, who was allowed to plead out to a misdemeanor charge of parading inside the Capitol. Yeah, she didn't much care for the deal. Speaking of Jesse Griffith, he's a video game developer from Tenistan. And she spent an hour grilling prosecutors from Merrick Garland's Department of Justice and giving them Hail Columbia. She asked the prosecutors, why, if you're calling it an attack on democracy unparalleled in American history, why people like Jesse Griffith and other insurrectionists were basically answering the same charge that nonviolent protesters who will, like, yell out during a congressional hearing get. She told the prosecutors that they had created what she called a bit of a disconnect. She said it was their strategy, their tactic, and their decisions were muddled. And then she handed out almost schizophrenic. She noted that the maximum amount of time that any of these pleas could get in jail was 6 months. That's it. And she asked, and I don't know if she got a decent answer, is it the government's view that the members of the mob that engaged in the Capitol attack on January 6th were simply trespassers? And she asked it almost as though she could not herself believe it. Is general deterrence going to be served by letting rioters who broke into the Capitol, overran the police, broke into the building through windows and doors, resolve their criminal liability through petty offense pleas? And that's PLEAS, not PLEASE. She added that Jesse Griffith, who was before her, she said probation should not be the norm. But then she said, I can't punish him more than what others are getting for the same or similar offense. And so she gave him 36 months probation. And I don't I'm so glad that she said what she said. I don't know why we had to wait all this time for one of these Article III judges, cloaked in all the power of Article III of the Constitution of the United States, essentially with a lifetime appointment on good behavior. I don't know why it took so long for one of them to say something, but other judges have ignored prosecutors saying, no, just learn to turn them loose. It's okay. And I hope they went back to their little offices, these federal prosecutors, and said, man, I don't ever want to go through that again. And maybe somebody will go up and have a conversation with Merrick Garland, who seems more concerned that he be perceived as above the fray of politics than actually defending the Constitution of the United States. That's the way I heard him described earlier today on National Petroleum Radio. Bob Costa being interviewed by Terry Gross on Fresh Air said that the word on Merrick Garland in D.C. is that he wants to be seen as absolutely neutral in all things, absolutely non-political, non-partisan. And I guess that's what makes him afraid to go after these fucks. And people wonder if he will have the nerve to go after the man who looks like hot dog smell, Steve Bannon, who was involved in the planning of this insurrection and now finds himself cited with contempt by the House of contempt by the House of Representatives. For Jesse Griffith's part, he stepped before the court and said, Your Honor, ma'am, my behavior was truly disgraceful. I'm ashamed of the way I acted. I thought we was just making a minor inconvenience, but I now know that the police were crippled by fear and wildly outnumbered. You know what? I can almost hear him smirking, saying, "Why crippled by fear and wildly outnumbered?" Because he knew that he and others like him created that fear and outnumbered those police. And he's going to pay $500 in restitution, Griffith is. Meanwhile, Judge Howell got out her ciphering machine and said, well, okay, if everybody charged pays $500, that comes to $300,000 out of the $500 million, also known as half a billion dollars, that taxpayers are footing the bill for to try to make sure this never happens again and repair the damages that they did. Meanwhile, answering Judge Howell's questions was Assistant U.S. Attorney James Pierce, who said, Your Honor, the government here, and by government I mean the Department of Justice, spit it out, son. We're somewhat in uncharted territory. And the way we come up with that $500 figures is we took the cost of the repairs, that's $1.5 million, and we divided it by the number of people who we believe entered the building, around 2,000 to 2,500. Jesus jumping Christ! Those words should have turned to dust in his mouth. But we divided by 2,000 to 2,500, and we asked those with felonies to pay more. People that just did misdemeanors, they pay less. Take a moment for that, though. Holy smoke. Somewhere between... Okay, we know that north of 12,000 people participated in the attack. Of them, the shock troops who ravaged into, marauded into the capital of the United States, shit on the floors, rubbed their own feces on the walls, you know, Trump supporters, maggots, were between 2,000 and 2,500 people. Let's use the upper estimate. 2,500 people barreled into the capital of the United States. My God! You would have had to throw elbows just to move around. I've talked before about what it's like to go to Bridge Day here. When we have it. You know, when people are actually smart enough to get vaccines and make sure that they won't be spreading a deadly goddamn virus. Well, we didn't have it this year. But I've been out on the bridge on Bridge Day. Everybody around here usually, I mean, at some point in time, you do it once just so you can say, yeah, you did it. And about 100,000 people pack out onto the bridge in the, six hours that Bridge Day is officially on, maybe seven. And it really is the very definition of being packed in there, butthole to belly button. And I'm not prone to claustrophobia. But I was out there one Saturday, and I felt it. I felt what it feels like. And it ain't pleasant. And you can't get through. 2,500 people barreling through the Capitol must have been at least a little bit like that. Because the Capitol is not a mile-long bridge. I mean, for those who cipher real goodly like, you can figure out what that concentration of humanity must be out on the bridge. It had to be 2,500 people. Then Assistant U.S. Attorney James Pierce, who at one point in time really wanted that job, I'm quite certain. Hey, Mom, Dad, I got a job with the U.S. Attorney's Office. Yay me! I worked so hard. Today was not one of those days. What the fuck did I get myself in? Because he made matters worse for himself and said, those 2,000 to 2,500 people, and we ask them to pay restitution, and our goal is to make the victims whole, the victim being the people of the United States whose Capitol building was attacked. We want to make the victims whole. That's one of those law school phrases. You got to make the victim whole. And Judge Beryl Howell, again, looking into her bag that is empty of fucks to give, said, well, you know, that doesn't even come close. And she said she found it highly unusual that the prosecutors, the Garland DOJ, weren't even asking for the maggots, the insurrectionists, to be under the supervision of the court until they paid their fines. Because they may or they may not. She said, this is the first time I've ever had the government ask for a restitution payment and not ask for a term of probation. Is it because the government thinks these defendants are more trustworthy? I don't know that there was a decent answer. Judge Howell apparently didn't think there was. Frustrated, she said, my hands are tied. In all my years on the bench, I've never been in this position before. And it's all due to the government, despite calling this the crime of the century, resolving it with a petty offense. Yeah, I think I would like to hear a recording of that whole hour. I'd like to, because I'm sure there's much more than just those few pull quotes from the Washington Post. Because, as we've pointed out for months now, it really is stunning when you realize how lightly these criminals are being treated. Just a little bit about Judge Howell, among other things. She was the supervising judge for the grand jury convened by Robert Mueller in the Russia investigation. She has been on the federal bench as a district judge since late 2010. She was appointed by Barack Obama. She is 64, going to soon be 65 years old. She got her undergrad at Bryn Mawr, and she got her law degree, her JD, at Columbia. She's an Army brat. Her undergraduate degree is in philosophy. She herself has been an assistant U.S. attorney. She was an assistant U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York. She was the deputy chief of the narcotics section. She has busted narco traffickers. She knows what dangerous criminals look like. And I think if you consider that within the light of, she has seen drug dealers, drug kingpins, seen the harm that they wreaked, and the fact that she looked at the maggot insurrectionists and said these are not mere protesters tells you a little bit about her judgment, and I dare say that it is solid. She sat on the United States Sentencing Commission from 2004 until she was elevated to the district court in 2010. She is, I guess you would say, conservative in nature. She's pro-law enforcement. She is pro-prosecution. And you get the idea that she knows what a damned criminal looks like. She is, among other things, as of 2015, she was noted as by Revel Law, she was noted as the second most cited district court judge appointed since 2010. But she has also been, because, you know, you get the idea she knows what she's looking at, because, among other things, she struck down a 1949 federal law that made protesting outside the Supreme Court a crime. A protester who had been charged under that sued the marshal of the United States Supreme Court, as well as the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, saying his First Amendment rights had been violated by that prior restraint. And Beryl Howell wrote, "The absolute prohibition on expressive activity in the statute is unreasonable, substantially overbroad, and irreconcilable with the First Amendment." Interestingly, the appeals court reversed her and struck her decision, because they knew damned good and well that the Supreme Court of the United States, those nine Solons, wanted to make sure that the proles weren't out there protesting too close to their inner sanctum. And that is why the Supreme Court has the massive buffer zone around it that stands to this day as an ongoing suppression of free expression. But she knows what she's seen, and she knows what these maggots are. God, she knows, she knows, she knows. Oh, and thank you. Thank you very kindly to Norman. Thank you, Norman. We are now $110 into Rico's Out and Proud and DeBerg challenge. That means we've got $190 bucks to go on it. That's a great start. Hopefully we can finish it off rather quickly. And it'll be profoundly helpful. Thank you, Norman, and thank you, Ralphs. That's so far so good. Some notes coming in. I mentioned Merrick Garland. Flavio said, it's as if Tony Evers, the current governor of Wisconsin, was heading the DOJ. God help us all. Not a dynamic driver of positive change is Tony Evers. Also not a Republican. But I get your point. Meanwhile, Rusty says, coal, let's not forget the giant coal deposits in Vietnam newly revealed. Oh, I've read about that. Well, we know what mountaintop removal will be coming to the hills of Vietnam sometime soon. You know it will. And it'll probably be the Chinese firms doing it, but I'm sure there are some American companies that are just, and Australian companies. Oh, who's that awful, awful, awful coal baron woman in Australia? They're salivating at the very thought. Thanks for the reminder. And as to the meeting in Glasgow, COP26, Robert in Australia says, did you know that in the UK, raw sewage is being dumped into waterways, rivers, and oceans because they can't get the chemicals to treat it thanks to Brexit? That won't embarrass Bojo the Clown, Boris, at all as he hosts COP26. Did you know that the United States Postal Service has decided to stop sending mail to Australia? October 25th, 2021, USPS released a service statement over the weekend asking customers to refrain from mailing items addressed to the 21 listed countries until further notice. Australia and New Zealand are both on the list. Did you know that Australia has said it will be carbon neutral by 2050? And Robert, pragmatist or pessimist, depending on which, Robert says, that means we'll be doing fuck all for the next 30 years. As it's a statement, not a commitment. There's no policy, no law, no nothing. But it sounds like we're doing something. We'll just keep digging up coal and selling it to anyone who wants it. Read China. Scott Morrison, who made that decision, will be dead by 2050. So he won't be in office in 2050, hopefully. So it's not his problem. And it comes with a little something from our friends, whom we love, at Juice Media. God, these people are geniuses. Just fantastic. Here we go.
Hello. Bonjour. Futsak. Salam. Kami. Banjingam. I'm from the Australian government with a message for the world as we gather in Glasgow for this crucial climate summit. Fuck you. Over the coming days, our prime marketer will be there trying to shake a lot of hands and saying a lot of blah, 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 like we're reducing emissions and net zero by 2050. But for those of you not fluent in Cantonese, the official language of the Australian government, what he's saying is, fuck you. We'll keep digging, burning and exporting fossil fuels, let you do the hard work and then take all the credit. Fick dick inskinny. We have lots of experience at this because that's what we do back home. Where we we let the states and territories build renewables, subsidise EVs and retire coal plants, while we obstruct renewables, shit-talk EVs and subsidise coal plants, and then take credit for reducing emissions. We even take credit when those reductions are due to policies the opposition introduced when it was in office. Policies we scrapped, causing emissions to rise again. Sometimes we even take credit for things nobody does, like carbon credits for not clearing land that wasn't ever going to be cleared anyway. If a tree isn't cut down in a forest, does it make a sound? Why, yes. Cha-ching. All that might sound like we do nothing, but we're actually very busy. Our environment minister just opened 3 coal mines in a single month, whilst appealing a court ruling that she has a duty of care towards children over climate change. And our minister for emission reduction, yes, that's really his title, is supporting massive new gas projects that'll contribute a cubic shit ton of emissions to the world not meeting the Paris target. The equivalent of 46 more coal plants. That's 3 more than the 43 new coal plants China's planning to build. We really are overachievers. Or as you Italians might say, siamo dei gran stronzi. What's that? How can we be expanding fossil fuels now that we've announced net zero by 2050? Oh, sweetheart. We can precisely because of net zero by 2050. Does it come with a policy? Nope. Is it binding? Nope. Does it rely on technologies that work or even fucking exist? Nah. But does it distract from what we're doing this decade? You betcha. And don't think we're the only ones. Am I right, Norway? Nice huge gas exports you got there. Hey, Canada. America. Loving that Line 3 pipeline you guys just expanded. UK. Nice new oil rigs you got ready to go there in the North Sea. Russia, baby. We see you doing fuck all. And to all the other governments attending, we know you want to punch us in the face for obstructing every COP since Kyoto. But hey, as long as you keep buying our coal and gas exports, we know you secretly love us for it. Most Australians are profoundly ashamed of our climate shitfuckery, so don't blame them. Well, except the dickheads who keep voting for us. For them, we reserve our biggest fuck you of all with our technology, not taxes plan, which means you pay for bullshit technologies that greenwash fossil fuel companies and they keep paying no taxes. That's the Australian way. We hope you enjoy this summit. And if it fails, don't forget to thank Scotty from Coal Fondling and all of us here at the Australian Government. Allez-vous faire foutre? Aloi Guy. Yes, Koyovi. Authorized by the Department for blah, blah, blah.
God, they're good. I mean, this is that is, it's hilarious. I mean, I just love her delightful Australian accent when she's fuck all. It's, But there's also something, satire has always been a profoundly powerful way of criticizing government. But it feels almost like in our time, it is the only way that we can criticize government. Almost makes you wonder if maybe Juice Media should have a little meet and greet with the Lincoln Project and say, Midas Touch. Of course, there's just a special degree of creativity, and everything they say is true, and it's documentable. We tend to focus on the United States' dirty hands. And they are dirty, where climate change is concerned. But as our expositor there made clear, there's plenty of filth to go around. Lord God, yes. So many. But damn, that's good. So good. I had a note from Megan. This is where we are now. That the standing attorney general cannot go after traitors and criminals and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law because he'd look partisan is just so sign of the times. How quaint the Clinton years look when Republicans work themselves into a lather over Bill's blowjobs in the Oval. Sleazy, skeevy. Absolutely. massive criminal conspiracy? Not so much.
Hillary Clinton blew Vince Foster's brains right out. I've proved it because I went out in the backyard and shot me a watermelon.
Mm-hmm. Quaint. Quaint indeed, Megan. And our buddy Frank says, capital insurrection. How can any American feel safe in their own homes when insurrectionists violate the security of the Capitol building, the People's House? How can we feel safe? Just wondering. You know, once upon a time, when I spent much more time in D.C. than I have in the last 3 years, two, I think our last trip was like fall of 2019. You actually did kind of feel secure-ish, also somewhat threatened-ish, because there were Capitol Police all over the place, armed to the teeth. And if something went sideways, by God, they were on it. And they would clear your happy ass off the Capitol. Get moving, citizen. And you'd see police converging, and it felt like maybe they were really, really, really on the ball. And not having been there since 2019, I don't know what it feels like anymore. I don't know if there's an ongoing sense of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because usually I save my exhortations for the ACAC to the end of the program when everybody's probably turned the podcast off. But yeah, this would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor HR 2073. If you've done it before, give them a little nudge. Call them again. The ACAC, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, because we can't get into D.C. to do the work. It's a damn shame. Because, I mean, every now and then you'll see that some group has gone to meet with senators or whatever. But for the most part, the everyday business of just swanning around the Capitol and going to various and sundry offices, that stuff's not happening anymore. I don't know. But we've got to do it by phone. But anyway, all of that having been said, the confluence of the pandemic and the insurrection and the way that Nitwit Nero responded to Black Lives Matter, I think have changed, based on what I'm hearing from people that I know who are still there, they've changed the tenor and quality of being in D.C. It just has a different vibe now. And I guess it's going to continue to have that vibe for so long as we wait for the other shoe to drop and for them to try to do it again. Is there another way to look at it? If you've got it, you let me know. This is, after all, Conversation Radio. And I'd love to hear from you. Just got a totally separate topic, but I get it. Dave number 11 says, finished the second season of Loudermilk last night. Guffaw! Oh, yeah. Heck, we're almost done with season 3. I think we've got one more episode left, so I won't spoil anything. I don't know how much buzz it's gotten, but it really is a well-made, well-written series. In fact, I was talking to our dear friend Tara Devlin, and I said I would be interested to hear her take on it, simply because she is very well-versed in her recovery. And I said, it sounds to me like somebody's been to a few meetings, whoever's writing this. And she was intrigued, and I said, you know, you don't think that something about a group of recovering addicts is going to be funny. But, oh my God, it is. It is. So I think Dave would join me. Dave number 11 would join me in recommending that show over on Prime. It's good to pass the time. And I went back and watched a little bit more or watched some Dune some more. And Agnes and I also watched The Many Saints of Newark. The sorta, but not really, kinda, maybe, prequel to The Sopranos. And James Gandolfini's son is uncannily like his daddy. And what a loss that was, that he died, James Gandolfini, as young as he did. But his son is going to be going places, and it's a great movie. If you like mob movies, and movies with like lots of violence in them, it's a fantastic movie. And apparently, it has revived an entirely new generation's interest in watching The Sopranos, because I guess there are younger people who watch The Many Saints of Newark. And then they want to find out what happened to young Tony Soprano, because James Gandolfini's son plays young Tony before he's, you know, Tony. It's really good, really good. Let's see what's going on here. Let's run over to the stress line and check in with Kevin in Western Mass. Hey, Kevin.
How's it going, Robin?
It's going kind of cold here today, but kind of gray. But I'm just, I'm vibrating like a struck tuning fork watching the time run down to our getaway day.
I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, you were talking earlier about, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And, I've seen Garland, you're saying that, he's, going to be neutral and all this other stuff. And, I don't see anybody taking the bull by the horns here and going after any of these people anywhere. I mean, you look all around the country, really, as far as government officials, and I just don't see any leadership on it. Like, I mean, it's going to be too late. When the other shoe drops, that's going to be, I don't even want to paint pictures.
Oh, I know. I mean, I keep coming back to that one line that we all learned in the immediate aftermath of January 6th when I forget where I saw it, but a failed, an unpunished insurrection is a dress rehearsal for the one that succeeds.
Yeah.
And I do. I really do. I find this chilling.
Yeah, because now, they had the hearings the other day on the Capitol Hill for all the election workers, all the poll workers. And, okay, we need more, we need more security for poll workers. All right, so now who's going to want to take that job? In other words, what are you going to have? Like, is it going to be state? Are they going to be state employees, local people? Federal people, all these polling places, what are you going to do? I mean, and so don't you think that they're going to go after the people that are going to help the poll workers, the security people or whatever they're going to be, federal officials, whatever branch of government they're working for to keep these people safe, they're going to be targeted as well. So like, where does it stop? You know what I mean?
This needs to have come at a profound cost. One of the things that I heard Robert Costa talking about with Terry Gross earlier today was the fact that Steve Bannon really, really wants to be charged with criminal contempt, wants to be convicted of it. Wants to drive it all the way to the Supreme Court because he feels confident that because the federal judiciary has been remade in the image of Nitwit Nero with the connivance of Moscow Mitch, He thinks he's going to get to the Supreme Court and it'll be overturned.
Yep.
And so congressional contempt will no longer have any teeth whatsoever, and any maggot can tell the Congress to just F right off, and the Congress can go pound sand. And I don't know about you, Kevin, yeah. I find that chilling.
Oh, of course. Because now it's like, okay, so who's in our corner? Like, who's going to do the enforcing? Who's going to do the, I mean, you look at every, all right, let's add it all up. Let's start with local police, state police, constables, you name it, right? What percentage of them are on the other side? 70%? 60%? I don't know. Nationwide, I mean, just like when push comes to shove, who are they going to back? I mean, right? Like, so you're out there, you're going to go vote, or, you know, you're at a mall or something, and, you know, somebody gets out of their car and they see a Biden sticker in your car and they they go after you, you know, and they beat the shit out of you, or you beat the shit out of them, or whatever, you know, and it's like, who's going to do the enforcing? Who's going to do the enforcement?
Oh, I know. Like, and to go back to your previous question about poll workers, I don't know what it's like there in Massachusetts, but here in West Virginia, it's all the Secretary of State or any county clerk will tell you it is damn difficult to get a poll worker. For years and years, yeah, and years, poll workers were routinely women in their 60s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah. That's pretty much work. Same thing here. We haven't had any, I haven't heard any problems in this state as far as poll workers. I mean, I have nothing that's, you know, come across, but, you know, it is Mass, of course, but, you know, we got New Hampshire right near us, and I've heard a few crazy things out of New Hampshire, but nothing, you know, nothing really, really bad, but, I don't know. It's like, what's the next line of defense? I mean, you got the National Guard units all over the country. No, Guard units are different. Every state's got a different, you know, makeup of, you know, what would happen. Like, let's just say a Guard unit has to go in and quash something. It's like, you know, everybody's got families. Everybody's got, you know, I know I'm kind of like going on tangents here, but I'm just trying to paint a picture. Like, I don't know. It's like the other shoe to drop. It's interesting because it's like, okay, how far are they going to go? How far? And you know how it is with appeasement. You know, they just take more and more and more until they're in power, and it's like then you're screwed. So, you know.
Well, right. It's the old adage about the camel's nose under the tent. I went into this one evening and pointed out that, you know, the reason that is an adage is that when the camel gets his nose under the tent, the hump will shortly follow, and the next thing you know, you've got the whole camel in the tent.
Yeah, exactly. You got the whole...
And chaos then ensues.
I think, you know, what... It's going to depend on... At some point now, okay, Garland's not stupid. He knows that this is some crazy shit that's going on. He knows that, okay? Biden knows it. Everybody knows it. They all know it in Washington. You know, they're playing cool right now because, you know, I guess they don't want people panicking or whatever. But look, everybody out there, you and me, and just look, you pay attention to the news. You don't have to watch. You don't have to be like a, you know. Anybody, it's just obvious. It's out there. You can feel it. You can just feel it out there. You go to the grocery store. You go get gas. You look around. You just, people are sizing everybody up. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, you know, it's everybody's like, it's like, oh, wow, we're going to, you know, I don't know. That's just, so like, they have to at some point acknowledge that it's a threat, and they're going to have to act or be proactive. It's just what's going to cause them to be proactive. What is it going to be? Because you said with Bannon, he'll become a martyr, and maybe you just let him just like flounder. You know, don't give him like you said, don't give him what he wants. Don't go after Bannon. In other words, I don't know, maybe this House Select Committee can find some kind of angle. I don't know. But then again, it all comes down to who's going to enforce it, right? Who's going to, if they do find a big fish, I'm talking, you know, right up to Donald Trump, guilty, and they say, okay, we're going to put you away or whatever. Who's going to, all right. So then if shit really hits the fan, who's going to do the enforcing and who's going to, you know, what side is everybody going to be on? We don't know. You know, anyway.
You raised the point that we keep hammering here at this program, that I think the infiltration of law enforcement in the military is far greater than anyone dares to consider. Mm-hmm. And so what happens if an order is given and they join the rebellion instead?
Right. So then we'll all know where we're at. Then that's it. That's right. Everybody will know. Then it's on. Then I guess it's on. I mean, if you can't rely on your own military and your own law enforcement to protect you, well, then I guess, well, we'll know where we're at then when that day comes. And then it's just, you know, but the markets, I mean, look, you think the big money people would somehow, they know what's going on, you know, the corporations and stuff. And,
right.
You know, they want a way of life. Huh?
I said, right. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got kids and they want a livelihood. They don't want to see this place go up in smoke. So, you know, I don't know. Just wondering. That's all. I'll let you take another call.
All right, Kevin. It's great to hear from you. You stay safe. You hear?
Bye, man.
All right.
You too, now.
Bye.
Okay.
And that's our buddy Kevin calling from Western Mass. And I don't. Do we have an answer to any of this? I think his sense is absolutely correct. And I think we collectively have a sense that things are dangerously wrong. And you know, bless his heart, Bernie Sanders is trying to make clear the danger that this country faces, not just from the insurrectionists, but from the legislative skullduggery and the legislative betrayal perpetrated by the Manchin Cinema Hell Flex. Bernie said yesterday, speaking to reporters, "The challenge that we face in this really unusual moment in American history is whether we have the courage to stand with the American people and take on very powerful special interests. If we fail, in my view, if the American people do not believe that government can work for them and is dominated by powerful special interests, the very fabric of American democracy is in danger. People will no longer believe, have faith that their government represents them. That is what this issue is about." And he's right. And when the Democrats fail, those workaday Americans run into the open and loving arms of the white nationalist right. And Bernie is so pissed at the Manchin Cinema Hellplex. In his words, the two of those sabotaged and destroyed the bill. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but electric vehicle credits got cut by Joe Manchin. A billionaire tax that would have only affected the wealthiest, get this, 0.0002% of Americans, got cut by Joe Manchin. And he's bragging about it. And that's what, it pisses me off. They talked about electric vehicles spending $80 million building charging stations. I said, I'm having a hard time with that. I don't remember the federal government building filling stations when Henry Ford invented the Model T. Somebody's feeding him this crap. Probably an oil company.
We didn't build us no gas stations.
Well, in 1908, when Henry Ford put the Model T out, it's worth noting that there were two automobiles per 1,000 people in the United States of America. And also, he failed to note that people really didn't know about climate change back then either. And so we're down from a $6 trillion proposed bill, as much as 10, which would have been $1 trillion a year, which is a drop in the bucket for what we actually need. And all along, he was pushing for a $1.5 trillion bill. And here's the ugly news out of that. I saw some polling data. And it just, I did that Jean-Luc Picard thing with my head in my hand. Not this shit again. But, yeah, this shit again. There's been polling taking place via YouGov in West Virginia and Arizona. And we've talked about how just god-awful our side is at messaging. And we are. People have good ideas and then they can't come to fruition. It's just craziness. And so there are no big billboards that I've seen saying, tell Joe Manchin to stop fucking West Virginia. Or something that can actually go on a billboard. But on my way home from Huntington yesterday, just east of Charleston, on I-64, 64 and 77 together. There it was. Tell Joe Manchin not to raise our taxes with Nancy Pelosi's bill. I'm pretty sure that there weren't anybody, that those billboards were not put up by anybody who could even tell the difference between Left Hand and Fraser's Bottom in West Virginia. Now, I'm sure that was a nice dark money super PAC with enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills.
Don't raise our taxes.
Of course, none of this would raise taxes on anybody who works for a living in this state. The number of people who make, mansion money are very few indeed. But yeah, they've succeeded. The survey conducted by YouGov found that 53% of those polled in West Virginia, I wasn't one of them, think Democrats should scrap the reconciliation package because the investments may lead to higher middle-class taxes, interest rates, and inflation. 57%. On the other hand, 32% of West Virginians said, yeah, they should pass the bill because it invests in America's future. And it's all paid for by taxing the wealthy. You know what that 32% is? And it's like this around all over Maggot Nation. That 32%, curiously enough, is the same 32% that voted for Joe Biden in this state. Really? Yeah. because that's the way things are. Politics in 2021, politics determines what you choose for fucking dinner. And it's not much better in Arizona. In Arizona, stand 47%, a mere 6% less than West Virginia. 47% said Congress should scrap the reconciliation package. Again, because of potential higher middle class taxes, interest rates, and inflation. In other words, manufactured AstroTurf lobbyist bullshit talking points. And curiously enough, in both West Virginia and Arizona, 16% said, you know, I ain't sure. I wish I was kidding. I am not. So there we are. And I'm not gonna be pissed off at the Progressive Caucus if they say, listen, you know, fuck it. But we will be beaten over the head with, you know, Democrats can't do nothing when they get in Congress. That's why you can't have Democrats running Congress. They won't get nothing done. When, well, the Democratic majority in the House has damn well done their job. And they keep doing their job. But Joe Manchin and, the Manchin Cinema Hellplex, they're doing the Republican Party's work for them. And now Joe has a poll to point out and say, see? See? Hardworking West Virginians don't want their taxes raised by this entitlement society that people like Bernie Sanders want to create. Yeah. As to Henry Ford and Joe Manchin's idiotic statement, I don't recall Henry Ford paving every road in every city so his cars had somewhere to run, Robert in Australia says. I don't recall Henry Ford building the interstate highway system. That was taxpayers who did that. Yes, it was. But don't tell Joe that. He has such a limited grasp of history. So limited. Joe Manchin's knowledge of history extends only so far as some little snippet of history supports his ongoing fucking of America. Maybe we should just call him Fam. Hey, Fam! Only in this case it means fuck America Manchin. Gas stations! Matt in San Francisco says they may not have built gas stations, but they sure as fuck built roads. Yeah. Don't bother Joe Manchin with those. Well, I'm sure Joe would agree with that greasy-headed old B-movie actor, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, who once said, "Well, facts are stupid things." Doing some math, Stephen New York says, billionaires, so Joe supports 0.0006% of people in West Virginia who are billionaires. That's one out of 1.8 million. Ta-da! I mean, they may squabble and spat, but Joe knows that Make West Virginia Great Big Old Jim, Governor Jim Justice, could buy Joe for what he thinks he's worth, sell him at a loss for what he's actually worth, and never count them, and never miss the money. Yeah. All of these things. And so we go back to the phones here at the halfway point of this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we got Dave in the Blind. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Robin.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I told Christine about what the insurance company was doing to you.
Yeah.
She told me, and I'm quoting her here, you tell Robin if she needs someone to go with her to raise Cain on those insurance people. I'll be right there. I said, God, it sounds like the beginning of the Blues Brothers. Are we getting the band back together?
Oh, my God. We got a half a tank
of gas. Think about it.
We got a half a tank of gas, a pack of cigarettes, and we're on a mission from God.
And she's blind. Hit it. I could definitely see that.
What a sweet thing for her to say.
But she actually means it. She could not believe, even though we both held life insurance licenses in our past, that they would be as stupid as to say something like that. I said, yes, dear, but they're a health insurance company. They're into denying everything.
Yeah, how about that? Health insurance in the United States is deeply in denial. It's denial. It's more than a river in Egypt.
That's right. And they get away with it because what most people don't understand is that commissioners of insurance are generally considered state magistrates for the purposes of insurance.
But in many states, they're also a wholly owned subsidiary of the insurance industry.
Yes, that's true. There was one when Mitch Daniels first became governor of Indiana. He tapped a gentleman who had an agency with Allstate. Now, in Indiana, the commissioner is required to put up a $50,000 surety bond against his good behavior, his or her good behavior. The man turned the governor down because he was making too much money with his agency. He'd have to give that up in order to serve as commissioner. So, yeah, it's a very flawed system, but they you can beat your head against the wall with them. But I had when I was going to college, I had an instructor in one of my classes who was an insurance agent in his regular day-to-day life. And he found that one of his partners was screwing his father over on a policy. And I said, you need to take this up with the commissioner of insurance. He goes, yeah, but I said, you don't owe this man anything. If he's going to screw your own father over, you have an obligation because your father's a policyholder to report this. The thing is, I've had insurance agents argue with me about the finer points of the life insurance license, for example. And they're arguing with somebody who got 100% on the legal portion of the test. And you're only allowed 75% in any section of the test, and there are only four legal questions on the test. There's like 100 questions on the test. And you've got to get at least a 75 overall to be licensed. To think these people don't know what they're doing is foolish. And any doctor, what they do is they get retired. Doctors who are basically retired to write this crap up. When I went for my disability when I was 18, I got a letter from Social Security saying that cerebral palsy affecting the lower legs was not a permanently disabling condition. I knew right away that somebody with a JD wrote that, because an MD would never say that.
Well, I wouldn't be so fast. Remember, an MD said that my surgery could be done on an outpatient basis. You know, just slap it on there and send her out the door.
Yeah, so I understand that he said that, but you got to understand, the doctors that the insurance company will hire are usually doctors who are retired or that nobody else will go to.
Yeah, or who can't put a Band-Aid on without putting someone's life at risk.
Right, and I've dealt with doctors all of my life. It's second nature. So when I question them usually from a position of some knowledge. I know enough to ask the right question, and it irritates a lot of them. But
speaking of right questions, I'm actually beginning to jot down all the questions I want to ask my surgeon at my pre-op. Appointment with him.
Okay.
And one of them is to, it's not so much a question, but a statement, because this is a teaching hospital. And yes. This may mark me out as an asshole, but I intend to say to him, I've come to you for this because of your reputation and your expertise. And teaching hospital or not, I want to know that you're the one who's going to be doing it and not some third-year thumb-fingered resident.
Right.
I won't be quite that crass. But
well, even if you are, Robin, the individual whose life he's got in his hands is yours. So you have every right to ask him that question. And in the tone that you just asked me, because when I had my appendix out, it was inflamed and it was an emergency surgery. And I was at a teaching hospital here in Indianapolis. And the doctor told me, he asked me, he said, I'm going to be supervising your surgery, but would you consent to allow one of our residents to actually perform the surgery? I said, are you going to be right there if something goes wrong? He said, yes. And if something goes wrong, I will step in and take care of it. I was comfortable with that. I was not so comfortable when he came to me the next day and said that when they took my appendix out and put it in the pathology tray, that it had been so inflamed that it exploded when it hit the bottom of the pan.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Yeah, there went dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone, but, you know.
No, I understand that. But you're talking about a major surgery, yep, for you, 8 hours under at least, recovery time.
And the fact that it has an aesthetic component.
Well, be that as it may, and this aesthetic component, that's insurance speak for, we don't want to pay for it, but we're going to catch all kinds of hell if we don't. So they're trying to be Solomon with the sword and divide it in two.
Yeah, I'm not. They're already splitting the baby, okay? And that's as far as I want to take it. That was a joke for the boys.
I understand.
Yeah, for the boys down at the Emporium.
Well, you know, they are more than willing to put these people. But I got to say, it's about damn time that a federal judge looked over at the U.S. attorney. Oh, I think Thurston and Lovey would be so happy with her.
I would have been equally tickled if she had said, you know, do you want to bring him cookies too? Should the court enter an order compelling the U.S. Marshal Service to take him to fucking Burger King?
Yeah. Now, you realize, of course, and I've gotten a hold of records from the 1920s, court records, that are in the state archives, eventually, unless those records are sealed, those can be accessible to the public. Her comments can be known. And when I was doing my research on D.C. Stevenson, I actually had the actual physical transcript, the original, of the grand jury testimony that indicted D.C. Stevenson. And it was that onion skin stuff that comes out of the stenograph machine. And it was really delicate stuff. I had to wear conservator's gloves to handle it. It was very brittle because it was, from the 1920s, the late 20s. But when you lay that kind of stuff out, you get to see the stuff that most of the public doesn't see or hear about because the papers don't cover it in that much detail. And at one point, the wife of the publisher of the Indianapolis Press, which later became the Indianapolis Star, Mrs. Hilton U. Brown was asked about the victim, Madge Overholtzer. Was she a woman of good quality? And Mrs. Hilton Brown said, she wouldn't have been in my house if she hadn't been. It was more of that, what was she wearing kind of question.
Yeah. So it sounds like.
But you have every right to ask the doctor anything you want because, it's your life. And I would say that if you're going to take Christine up on her offer, that you pack plenty of food and plenty of gas and ask her if she's got an extra cane. If not, you can swing by my place and grab a spare.
they were kind enough to say to me, Dave, you will not be kicked out on day three. We will keep you the entire time, and everything's going to be great.
That's a medical decision, and the doctor would be if he were to release you too early, then he would be putting your life in danger. Yeah. And he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that regardless of what the insurance company says.
Yeah. And they will have me, they'll have me strong enough to do some walking by the time I leave, but we will be Ubering from the hospital back to our digs. And I will have to be able to walk from the car to the elevator to the room.
So you're checking into a motel or something?
It's an extended stay suite.
Oh, okay.
It's like a little apartment.
Okay, it's like a little apartment.
It's like a little apartment. It's got a kitchen and a bedroom and a living room area. Little workspace.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you will have probably early follow-ups in the couple of weeks after your surgery. So,
yeah, I've got a follow-up. They will let me out on day five, and then on day seven I have my first follow-up, and then on day 14 another follow-up, and another follow-up at the one-month mark, or day 28.
Well, it sounds to me like you're in very competent hands, Robin.
Everyone I've spoken to has said exactly that, so it'll be surgery on the 9th, appointment on the 16th, appointment on the 30th, and then appointment on, like, the 14th. No, appointment on the on December, on Pearl Harbor Day. How about that?
Well, I know you don't do any drinking, so I don't have to warn you about getting bombed on Pearl Harbor Day.
Yeah, yeah, no kamikazes.
Right.
Oh, that was awful. I'm ashamed.
I think
you started.
I think
it.
We're going to get a couple of definitely canoes. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll take the rap for those canoes.
And of course, you know, just by so people. It's possible there are these things called revisions. He may have to go back in and fix some things. It's been known to happen.
To make sure everything is working properly.
And looks right.
Yeah.
Because like I said, there is an aesthetic element to all of this.
Yeah.
I think north of 95% of these procedures involve a phenomenon called granulation, and that has to be fixed. Cautery, silver nitrate. I'm told that it just burns like hell. But it's all, you know, I'm completely at peace with all of it because it all just takes me. It takes me to a place that I want to be. So, you know, I explained to a friend of mine, it's not what the doctor is going to do to me, it's what the doctor is going to do for me.
Well, it's like you explained early on in this process. The reason for the surgery is so that the outside resembles more of what the inside feels like.
Yeah.
I remember you saying that, and that makes all kinds of sense. And when you say it's a life-saving procedure, I agree. Because now you can live fully as yourself.
Yes.
And you know.
I didn't think of it in these terms, but when Rico earlier said, you could have carried your secret to the grave. I
know from experience that's not good.
And that that kind of stopped me in my tracks. It was profound.
Yeah.
It was terrifying because, you know, you live in constant. If somebody finds out, I'm ruined.
But you're in a better place in your life than you were earlier on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Happier.
And you've got a loving family around you.
Yes.
And you've got friends. I count myself among them.
You certainly are.
Who are pulling for you. And
a lot of people who go through these procedures, whether male to female to male, non-binary, whatever, do not have anything approaching the cheering section that I have. And I am forever grateful for it.
I'm so happy to hear that, Robin. So, like I said, Christine Dropper was not a joke. She was like,
"Oh no, I get a feeling Christine would enjoy breaking bad on an insurance company." Unfortunately, I don't know who the quack was who made that decision, but. Suffice to say, I hope no one actually goes to that person seeking medical treatment because. Let's do open heart surgery on you, and you know this is an outpatient procedure. Here, okay, we're gonna do. Here's a transplant.
We gotta take you off the bypass machine now. because your hour and a half that the insurance company is paying for it, so sorry.
No, that's
not going to work.
No, you can't be on the machine that goes ping more than an hour. I mean, the meters run down to zero. So yeah, no. Hey, Dave, it's great talking to you, my friend. I hope things continue to go well, and I'm hoping we'll be talking again soon.
Sooner than
I imagine. I really do want to be back on the air quickly.
Well, don't push yourself too hard, Robin.
I'm not going to push myself. And what's more, I have a caregiver who will not let me.
Good.
And you know, I'm so grateful that she's going to be there with me.
I'm glad she is too, because she's going to keep an eye out on you, and she knows when you're trying to bullshit. So, hey, honey, I'm feeling fine. Yeah, bullshit.
Get back in bed. Dave, take care and give our best to Christine. She's so sweet. Thank her for her hell-raising generosity.
Well, it's well deserved, Robin, and I'll let her know.
All right, you take care, Dave.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's our buddy Dave in the blind, and we'll as we approach the third hour of the program. There remains $190 to go on Rico's Out and Proud and DeBerg challenge. Thank you, Rico. Okay, all right, point taken. Message from Brother Deacon Asa. I swear if you talk about granulation and matters related to some such again, I will personally reach out every day before dinner and make sure you never live this down. This is worse than your sinus oyster cracks long about the afternoon snack time in the Pacific seaboard. Asa remembers everything, sinus oysters. Well, I mean, come on! But it does impact one's ability to consume oysters on the half shell. But they're wonderful. Then you overcome, right? Yeah. Let's keep it rolling, and hopefully we'll bring in some of that 190 and meet Rico's challenge. That would be fantastic to be finished up this evening, if at all humanly possible. We got Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, go hey.
Hey, go hey. Golly, I estominis duisa in partes tres.
Okay, what you just said, because I can't.
I know you can't. You can't with me.
I can't. Not can't, but I.
Yeah, can't.
It's like, yeah. No, today was one of those. Like, I just totally for. The one day. Normally, I'm home by 8:45 in the morning if I come straight home. But today was the day that I was late for everything, and I had a 9 a.m. phone appointment with my you have to, in order to register for the next semester, you have to have another advisement appointment. This stuff, I'm looking at the clock going, it's 9 o'clock, and I'm not called right at 9. The one time somebody to be late, they're not late. So I said, well, give me about 5-10 minutes. So finally got home. And they call back so I can, find out what classes I need to take for next semester, because next semester is my last semester at CSUN before I graduate. And I thought I needed two classes, one of which being a science class and the last class that I need for in my major. Well, come to find out, my advisor for Africana Studies took one of my classes that I took 1,000 years ago and substituted it for the last class that I needed for Africana Studies. So now I only need four units.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, but it's a science class, dude.
Is Geology 101 and lab available?
Yeah. It is. So
you want that?
The thing is,
you want that?
If I do, but the problem is, I was checking the times that is available, and none of which work for my schedule.
Ah,
that part. So the one class that seems to work that has a lab is Science 101, which is basically sustainability, or better known as a class on climate change.
Hey, that's got potential.
That has potential. I went on rate my professor or what have you, and it's online. It's asynchronous, so there's no set time to meet, which I do okay in those classes. So basically, if you, from what I read, as long as you, you know, do, you know, watch your lectures.
Uh-oh.
You don't, but I still need to take 8 units so I can get financial aid though. So,
I'm Latin 2.
To find it. Huh?
Latin 2.
I don't know if he's going to offer it though. That's the problem.
Ah.
Because he tried to offer it last spring, but not enough people signed up for it, so they had to cancel it.
You could go out and drum up business, and one thing you could say to sell the idea.
What?
CSUN is offering a class that Howard, vaunted Howard, de-emphasized and got rid of.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they got away with it because there was a huge amount of backlash. But yeah, Howard wanted to ditch its classics department.
No. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
That's some balderdash.
Yeah, the Harvard of the
The HBCUs.
Yeah.
That's stupid. But speaking of my Latin teacher is, did you get a chance to read that article yet?
No, I have not, because we got home kind of late, and I kind of had to jump right into the chair and get ready to go.
Right. Well, oh, come on. Black Odysseus?
Mm-hmm.
And what was it? Black Odysseus. And so, you guys, so basically, it's about the article is about when do white people become white. So this is about the Roman Empire and when did basically when did race become an issue?
Who invented the idea of race? Because it is certainly not a scientific reality.
Yeah. Right. And it's a great article. It is such.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
It's such a great article. And my teacher is this guy. He is not the typical, you know, classic teacher, you know.
But he's got a classics PhD from, you said, UCLA?
Uh-huh.
Cool.
I believe it's UCLA. But he is so cool. It was so funny because yesterday I was doing something. I was working on something from another class, and I totally forgot. I forgot about that, the assignment, because we're supposed to read the article and then take a quote from the article and write a few, not even a paragraph, but just write something, take a quote from the article and write my opinion about the article. I mean, about the quote. And I totally flaked. And so I came to class yesterday. And he was asking what we thought. And I said, he said something because they were talking about the word Alta and Abba and stuff like that, you know, which is like, you know, alabaster, where we get the word alabaster. And I said, well, I really can't comment, you know, to be transparent. I didn't get that far in the article because I totally flaked. I didn't finish reading. He's like, well, don't worry about it. I'll reopen the assignment so you can read it and get it. See, I mean,
yeah, that's cool.
How many teachers will do that?
That's somebody who wants you to learn the stuff, not torment you with it. Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Ron and Raleigh says, back in the day, we used to call Geology 101 Rocks for Jocks, a way to keep that C average.
Yeah, see, that's what I you know, I think I was telling somebody, I said, I need, if I was going to one of those schools like UCLA where, you know, there's classes specifically for athletes so they'll pass and get the C, I need a class like that.
That's how I met my math requirement in college.
You know.
Math, it was Math 23, Introductory Concepts in Mathematics. And I had basketball players and football players in the class with me, and we watched Mickey and Donald go to Math Magic Land.
No, you did not.
Yes, and we learned to count in the Mayan numeral system.
What?
Mm-hmm. I'm lying. No, I wound up tutoring. Me, the English major, tutored in a math class once.
Ha! Wow, dude, seriously? Okay, no, wow. I'm still like, wow. Wow. Yeah, no, wow. I think I told this story about all through middle school, well, junior high, because when I was in school, they called it junior high, but not middle school. But all through middle school and most of high school, math was just like, no, this is, I detested it.
I was great till I hit algebra. And I hit algebra and I made my very first C ever.
And it hit you back.
Oh, it was crushing.
But then I found out that I wasn't an idiot, and I got all the way to business calculus once I got into once I went to junior college, and then I got my business calculus teacher. I had no idea what he was saying. And that was if, and at that point, that's when I decided that I was not going to be a business major anymore because I needed that to, you know, go on to, cause I took statistics and I had to take business calculus or something and it wasn't clicking. And I'm like, that's it. No more math for you.
Not for that.
It was painful and hurtful and mean, and I said no, but yeah. So your girl only needs. So I'm trying to decide what other. So I need 8 more units for financial aid. So I have no idea.
How about Introduction to Shakespeare?
What, did we not have this conversation the other day about Shakespeare?
Yeah, yes, and I'm not giving up.
No, because see, that means a lot. I want to take something that I don't have to think about. Maybe I'll take an art class.
They're hard. Ooh. How about appreciation of theater?
Yeah, see, maybe something like that, or maybe a black cinema class.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like that.
Or how about acting for non-majors.
See, something like that. You know?
But there'd be there'd be thinking involved.
Well, I just don't want, actually, what I might take is maybe a creative writing class. I don't mind.
There you go. That'd be good.
You know, I don't mind classes like that. I'm hoping because, next semester, it looks like a lot of the classes are going to be, they're trying to put, because, you know, money. And so it looks like 80% of the classes are going to be back on campus, which I think is insane because we're still in a pandemic. But they're acting like we're not. So they're forcing the issue. But that's another thing I was looking at because the sustainability class is the lab and the lecture is, like I said, online. I think the creative writing class there's a Black women's writers class. So, you know, you got people like, you know, Alex Walker, Audre Lorde, who else? Oh, of course, Maya Angelou, Octavia Butler, you know, people of that magnitude. Who did Beloved? Even though I don't really like her writing.
Who, Toni Morrison?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a lot. But I have to say, when I was much younger when I read her stuff, so maybe I'll have a better appreciation of it. And of course, you know, Zora Neale Hurston, stuff like that. So, I don't want drama. But the thing is, I'm going to have to take, it's going to wind up being, it's going to wind up being 14 units because of the way it works. Stupid.
Don't lose it in the turn.
It's like, because all the, you know, because of course it's 4 units for the science class, because of course it has to be 8 units because, 3 units for the lecture and, 1 unit for the lab. And then now I got 3, 6, 9. Goose Great Line, the Monkey Tree, the Pack on the Street Car Line. I'm sorry, no. So 9 plus 4. So actually, you'll wind up with being 13 units. Fun stuff. So you saw that article that I sent you about the wonderful young man that is on trial for killing those people. It was that in Wisconsin?
Oh yeah. In fact, I've been meaning to get to that because I wasn't on air yesterday. Yeah. Yahair Rittenhouse, and the court, and I'm sure most people have probably heard this by now, but it still just makes my blood boil. The trial judge said that the people he allegedly murdered cannot be referred to as victims. And said, and we're talking about Kenosha County Circuit Judge Bruce Schroeder at a pretrial hearing. Let the evidence show what the evidence shows, that any or one of these people were engaged in arson, rioting, or looting, that I'm not going to tell the defense they can't call them that. At the same time, he said, that the prosecution cannot refer to them as victims. It's infuriating. And it's got to be reversible error. But I can't even conceive how you reach that conclusion. They were victims of a shooting. There's no other word, Tracy. And, of course, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keeper, maybe the one of those ultra-right-wing white supremacist groups, raised him gajillions of dollars for his legal defense. And I guess it paid off. What a ruling. I mean, that white privilege is some privilege, isn't it? Did I lose you, Tracy?
I'm sorry, Kate.
Okay, so you're still there. Not quite sure what's going on. There. You there?
Damn it.
Okay. What are you muting and unmuting?
It keeps muting and unmuting. Are they going to consider him a youthful
offender? I don't know. I don't know Wisconsin law well enough. I it's hard to imagine that given his age they would. But it sounds like they want to take him to Burger King, or at least the judge does. Come on, son, I just gave you an impossible ruling. Let's go get you an impossible Whopper.
I'm so tired. It is beyond. When I read that, I just stared at the article on my phone. I'm like, okay, breathe, Tracy, don't cuss, because it's not going to do any good to cuss.
That's a hell of a thing, though. But add to that another story that I've got lined up for this evening that just made me want to eat dirt and run rabbits. Big story broke in Rolling Stone.
Oh, God.
I mean, this is huge. It came out 4 days ago. The headline reads, exclusive, because we knew this, okay? This is just confirming what we already knew. Exclusive, January 6th protest organizers say they participated in dozens of planning meetings with members of Congress and White House staff.
Like we didn't know that.
But this is, you know, what makes this different is that has been given in sworn testimony to the January 6th commission by two and possibly three confirmed individuals. One, an organizer of the event. One, they're being kept anonymous. The planner and the organizer, a rally organizer, and the other was a planner. Both sources, Rolling Stone reports, were involved in organizing the main event aimed at objecting to the electoral certification. That was at the White House Ellipse, and it's from there that they marched to the Capitol at the behest of Nitwit Nero, and then proceeded to storm the barricades and attack government and attack the people of the United States. And we have a list of who those Congress critters were.
Oh, there's a list?
There's a list.
Oh, snap.
Yep. And they are described as explosive allegations, and they are. The organizer said, I remember Marjorie Taylor Greene specifically. I remember talking to probably close to a dozen other members at one point or another for their staffs. And the two sources were involved in the planning of a series of protests around at locations in a number of states in the weeks between the election and the insurrection.
Were there any senators on that list, or was it all Congress people?
It appears to all be Congress critters. And you won't be at all surprised to find out. Let's see.
Was Jim Jacketoff Jordan on there?
Let me see here. I'm looking for the.
Well, hell, how many folks is on there? How many people are on the list?
A lot. Six at the very least. Paul Gosar from Arizona, the demon dentist whose own family campaigns against him every year. Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber. Congressman Andy Biggs. Mo Brooks, Les Brains.
What about, I can't get, what about Gates or Gats or whatever his?
I don't know if Matt Gates is, okay. Paul Gosar, Mo Brooks, Les Brains, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball, Madison Cawthorn, Andy Biggs, Louis Asparagus Gohmert, and of course, Clanny Oakley herself, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, who shrieked and screamed about how she didn't have nothing to do with planning no insurrection. The organizer said, we would talk to Boebert's team, Cawthorn's team, Gosar's team, like back to back to back to back. Gosar went so far, Tracy, as to tell the planners of the insurrection that he'd already got it all locked up with the White House, that there would be blanket pardons for everybody. Our impression, the organizer says, was that it was a done deal, that Gosar had spoken to the president about it in the Oval in a meeting about pardons, that our names came up. They were working on submitting the paperwork and getting members of the House Freedom Caucus to sign on as a show of support. And Gosar gave them several assurances about a blanket pardon. Gosar told them, I was just going over the list of pardons, and we just wanted to tell you guys how much we appreciate all the hard work you've been doing. Yeah. And so that means that they were intimately involved all the way to Nitwit Nero. He was part of it. He was part of the conspiracy. And...
But nothing, they're not going to do anything.
I hope this is inflammatory enough to get Merrick Garland off of his tuchus. The conversation.
We're talking Democrats here, baby. I mean, I hope so too. You know, but it's.
Well, and see, here's one of the more salient details, I think. From the Rolling Stone article, the two sources also claim they interacted with members of Trump's team, including former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who they describe as having had an opportunity to prevent the violence.
Is our boy Steve Miller mentioned in there, too?
White House staff, I don't know.
What about Ivanka and...
Joanka?
Yeah, Joanka.
No mention there.
And
you know,
she's,
Jarrett. They have got, you know, and interestingly, they've dropped completely out of the spotlight.
Yeah, we ain't heard from them.
I strongly suspect they're deep in prayer, busily imploring any deity they can think of to please keep their privileged asses from getting indicted and going to prison.
I mean, you know, Don Jr. with his T-shirt business. Oh, vile contempt. It's just.
He's disgusting. Well, the thing is, there's been some blowback on this.
On which one? There's so many.
On this story. apparently there are Democrats who are now calling out and out for those six to be, or anyone who aided and abetted to be expelled from Congress.
Expelled? Did you say expelled?
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Right.
I'm going to indict.
Right. What's taking so long? David Cicilline of Rhode Island, is it? AOC, a couple of others said, they got to go.
Where's Auntie Max? Where's Auntie Max? Has she said anything?
I did not see her name in the story that I read.
No. Realty.
Oh, maybe they just didn't ask her yet.
Yeah, because I can't even imagine. And Karen Bass, because I.
Cori Bush?
Because she's not Auntie Karen yet, but she's pretty close. Because Auntie Maxine. Woo! I mean, you know, we might be losing Karen to become mayor of L.A.
No, I didn't. How about that?
Mm-hmm. She running.
Be damned. Well, good luck to her.
Yeah, because the people that are, everybody that's running, it just makes my head spin. It's like, ugh. I think the last person that I heard that's considering right now is the guy who's responsible for the Grove and Americana and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, another, you know, real estate developer. Yeah, that's like, we really need him to become mayor of Los Angeles.
Yeah, that'd be all great. Right.
That'd be great.
By the way, Matt in San Francisco just wrote in and said, Congress insurrection planners. The only reason Matt, it just gets worse, isn't on the list is because he was too busy scoring drugs and looking for underage girls to have sex with.
Yeah, he was busy doing
it. Yeah,
stuff.
It's hard to participate in that many crimes all at the same time. Yeah, why are these people still in Congress? Why are the powers that be seem to be so worried they might offend the insurrectionists? Since when do we give a fuck what people who want to overthrow the government feel? This is maddening. My husband and I are executing a plan to purchase land, home in a foreign country with the goal of completing within the next 3 years. Seriously, I think it's critical to have an escape plan.
People, I can't afford to leave. I mean, I guess basically, but I don't, it's not that I can't afford to leave. I don't, are you stupid? Sorry. I don't.
Give him hell, Tracy.
I mean, how are you just going to pull your, just, it's like, you don't see me driving? I'm in this really large yellow taxi. And you think, you know, I'm not going to come to a complete stop, but I'm just going to beat her. No, don't be stupid. But I don't get, why should I leave? I wish I had,
but I tell you what, it would not be terrible to have a bolt hole in Costa Rica.
Yeah, no.
Democracy? Democracy? Because they are one.
Healthcare?
Oh, by the way, Rona monkey up death sentence, the governor of Florida?
Yes.
I don't know that this, I haven't dug far enough to see if it was true, but a photo has emerged
Oh, God.
It's kind of blurry. And it apparently goes back to when he was a high school teacher.
Oh, no. This does not sound like it's going to end well.
No, they seldom do. And so it shows him with a beer in his hand. Hanging out
with the kids,
with
students,
with underage student
girls. But it's, again, we have proof that Matt Gaetz not only hung out with Paige for underage sex across state lines, and he's still in Congress. So, BFD. These the rules. I just think about the hullabaloo that we put that. What's my homie's name? The senator that they lost their minds over for allegedly touching somebody or pretending like he was touching somebody's behind. Help me out. Writer, Saturday Night Live.
Al Franken.
Al Franken.
Okay, so this comes from something called hillreporter.com. After college and before law school, Ron DeSantis spent a year teaching history at a high school in Georgia. According to a source with close knowledge of the matter, during that time, he was photographed partying with underage students. There is a, you know, there's a person's name, a reporter associated with the story. It's not the story is by Steph Basil. She reports on social issues and religion for Hill Reporter. The story was dated October 25th. A 2001 newsletter from Darlington School in Georgia says, Ron DeSantis is joining the upper school history department. DeSantis earned bachelor's degrees in history and political science from Yale University. While at Yale, he worked for the political science department, the athletic department, and the university sports camp. He has work experience with the Sonic Corporation and the office of Senator Connie Mack. And there they are, as described in the article, Tracy, it says, the photo shows a person purported to be DeSantis in a group embrace with several young girls, one of whom is holding what appears to be a glass beer bottle. The source who provided the photo says it was taken prior to graduation, meaning the young girls would still have been DeSantis's responsibility at the time. It is not clear whether any of them were legal adults, though they would have been too young to purchase alcohol. And a yearbook image shows DeSantis in the year that he worked for Darlington School with the same bowl cut and wide grin featured in the photo.
God. Vile. Just, ugh. You know, speaking of which, I know you don't watch Law & Order SVU. But there was years back, like not long after the show started, there was an episode about this girl whose mother was a raging alcoholic. And she was she had a boyfriend who was older than she was. And the mother was like, I'm going to get the guy arrested for statutory rape. And Olivia was like, you know, this doesn't make any sense, because she went through the same thing with her mother, who was an alcoholic. Her mother had a student that was 21 and she was 16 or 17, you know, younger than the age of consent. And she's like, he asked me to marry him, and I almost did. And but her mother broke them up, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, it was a different time. So then fast forward, you know, to now, and you didn't know who the kid guy was, but they brought him on the show for the 500th episode. And of course, back then, you know, 20-something years ago, you thought about it, it's no big deal. But now, you know, 20-some-odd years later, she's like, wait a minute. It may have been a different time, but it was still wrong. There's no way that a 21-year-old grown-ass man should have been messing with a 16-year-old.
Nope.
I don't care. But see, we're socialized into thinking older man, younger woman, it's okay. But is it really? No.
No.
Because it comes to find out that she wasn't the only one that he had done this to. So the guy was a predator. But it's amazing how the things that were acceptable at one point are no longer acceptable. Because one of my classes, we broke out into groups, and we were talking about doing different projects to bring awareness to certain things. And there's a transgender woman in my class, and she's a year older than me, black woman. And she's called herself a tranny. And when the younger girls in her group's like, that's not, that word is offensive.
That's not okay.
And so she said, you know, until she pointed it out to me, I didn't even think anything of it. And I said to her, I said, we are of a generation that we have been socialized into thinking that words that are harmful and hurtful are okay, because we have convinced ourselves that these words are okay, so they won't hurt so bad. So the things that people have called us and said to us, deep down we know these words aren't right. Deep down we know these words are cruel. But in order to get through it, we lie to ourselves to make ourselves feel better. It's called, you know, we're brainwashed, we're socialized, whatever you want to call it. And our younger generations, you know, these are millennials and whatever the generation is that came right after the millennials, they ain't having it. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, when she said it, I'm like, oh no, honey, no. And I, you know, and even me, I knew that word isn't ugh. And it's not because of you. It's just because of my own awareness. But sometimes we need people who are out, you know, who are outside of who we are to let us know, yeah, no, that's not good. You don't let people call you that. You know, it was like a light came on when that young lady, young woman told her that. It's like, no, that's not cool. It's like, no. And one thing she said was that she convinced herself that, the surgery and stuff like that, that it was fine that to not have the surgery, and that that this it was just okay being this, and I'm like, is that something that you really wanted? And she's like, I just felt that, you know, because I convinced myself that this was just the way it was supposed to be. You said, wow.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting. That's actually a broader topic of debate.
Right.
Is,
but it's just, but she never allowed herself to have that conversation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because of society's, you know. And I was like, wow.
I mean, I pursued this as hotly and quickly as I could. Because it just feels like it feels like it badly needs to be. And I'm not going to feel right until it is. And, you know, when they initially denied me, bad thoughts.
Well,
I was on the
phone with you when you called me that day.
And yeah, I was coming apart.
The only thing I wanted to do was, you know, I wish I could have just come through the phone to help you.
Oh, I was so mad.
Helene.
And so hurt and so scared.
Pull up your mask. Sorry.
No, teach. That's a teachable moment, Audie Tracy. Absolutely.
I was angry and hurt for you.
But they made it work. They made it work. And Terry gave me a list from back when she had hers of stuff to have. And Cynthia out in the Bay Area has been extremely helpful. And so I feel like I've got as much guidance as I could possibly have, and I just and I'm not saying they're wrong. I just can't imagine I can't imagine you know going through this and not ultimately getting it what I call right. But I also understand that that's not everybody. And trans is trans, and the rule one is you don't question anybody's transness. See, that's another moment where I myself have to live the, I don't understand, but I don't have to understand. I need merely have acceptance and compassion.
It's like, you know, when people say, I'm not, you know, oh, you're not black enough.
No.
Oh, you're not queer enough. I didn't know there was levels.
Yeah. I didn't know this was a freaking video game.
You know, so that means since I don't have my name on the leaderboard, what does that mean?
Precisely.
I'm good. You know, I mean, it's taken me this long to figure out where I am at this point. And who I am, my identity, and stuff like that. So, if you can't, if who I am or what I am is a prop, is problematic for you, then
right.
I don't care. You can, you know.
All you got to do is be you.
It's just be me, and that's and this is. I finally watched. The Polly Murray documentary on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And
oh, I think she muted for a second.
What they went through was heartbreaking.
Absolutely.
It was just, you know, how they were unrecognized. I mean, they were the first they were there before Rosa Parks on the bus going from, I think, New York to the South on the Greyhound bus. Their research was the basis. A paper that they did in college was the basis for Brown v. the Board of Education. Because, and all these things, but they're not in the history books, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't mean they're any less there.
Right.
Oh, and speaking of, I'm gonna make you say want to. I'm gonna make you want to say bad words, but you won't in front of the kids.
Right.
Okay. Story from about a week ago. Another of the maggots busted. Dude was arrested and charged. This guy was actually charged with theft because he stole a Capitol Police officer's baseball cap, fired up a cigarette inside the Capitol, shot video inside the Capitol, and along the way, apparently is said to have stolen china and various other souvenirs, including the baseball cap. He's looking at 5 counts of theft of government property. He's also looking at entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly conduct inside a Capitol building, and parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building, which is what the misdemeanor that they're letting all of these maggots plead to.
Misdemeanors.
Yeah, and he's a right-wing radio host on the Global Enlightenment Radio Network, GERN.
Enlightenment.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
His name's Daryl Neely.
Mealy Mouth Mother.
Mealy Neely. But if you were to look up Daryl Neely, Auntie Tracy is not going to be happy.
So I'm not going to look him up because I got better things to do with my time.
Yeah. You want me to just go ahead and say it?
Is he a brother?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This.
Mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He wore his stolen hat during a live stream of one of his broadcasts. And 3 witnesses who worked at his media outlet told the FBI that he bragged about how he took other items from the officer and china plates from the building.
But how much time is he going to do in jail, though?
Well, see, that's an open question. White guys are getting, like, you know, maybe probation is $500 worth of restitution. He said that he took the cop's jacket on January 6th when it was freezing cold as a souvenir.
See, that's the thing. See, this is...
Now, they may ring him up.
So we have, there's different levels of black personality, but it goes from the authentic struggler to the non-struggler. And the non-struggler is somebody like, you know, this brother here, or Clarence Thomas, or Candace Owens, or Corleone Noir. You know, these people.
You're from LA. You don't get to leave out your homie.
Jesse Lee Peterson.
Yeah.
Jesse Lee Peterson. And again, another person, homie from LA, Larry Elder.
Well,
you know?
Yes.
And then you have
the authentic. And by the way, that's Larry, she was too ugly for me to rape, Elder.
Right, right. And then you have the authentic struggler, Malcolm X, Angela Davis.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And then there's And then there's the opportunistic struggler, Abraham, you know, these people who you think they look good on paper, but they're just in it for the money. Blah, blah.
Right. Yeah. Getting blah, paid. Blah. Just getting paid. By the way, I gotta share a note. I mangled.
So as far as when you hear about people like that, brother, because my teacher keeps saying, you have what also called the surface level and the deep surface level, the deep level. So on the surface level, we're hoping, you know, this is what the. What they're thinking, you know, this is their on the surface, but on the deep level, they're really black. So they're hoping that they are, you know, when they go home and they're behind closed doors, they're really black. And I'm like, nope, they're not black. They are in the sunken place. They will never be black. And we're like, hopefully there will be something that'll happen that they will finally realize that they were black. But even for these people, nope, because they'll be the ones that if the cops pull them over and they get mistreated, they'll just say, well, they were just doing their jobs.
Well, there's a goddess of irony moment in this story, because in the FBI affidavit, they note that the China plates that he stole or allegedly stole were, mm-hmm. Remember, goddess of irony, off-white to tan in color. I know. By the way, I had a note. I mangled a name, and I'm always happy to have the correction. Charlene in Rogues Island says, just a heads up, David Cicilline is my rep, and his name is pronounced Cicilline. I don't know how many times I've screwed up that man's name, and I'm so sorry. But thank you for helping. It doesn't necessarily... there's no pronouncer, so I will try not to make that mistake again. Thank you, Charlene, and Tracy. We have Scary Jerry on the stress line.
Oh wow!
What's up, man?
Auntie Tracy, how you doing?
Hey, Eddie, how are you?
You know, I was going to call in, then you called in, and is what's happened at least 1,000 times. I just start listening, and this shit is 8:05. I'm like, damn it, I didn't call in. All right, I got a couple of points. You said you just started watching Doom, Robin? What's going on?
I'm sorry, say again. You got some wind blowing past you.
You just started watching Doom?
Oh, no. I watched it already, and I've gone back and rewatched parts of it.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah,
it is. Jaw-dropping amazing?
Yeah, it is. And it's like, you stopped. Oh, gotta have the next one.
Yeah, well, it has to stop there, because after that, you can go on the 5 hours. There's a lot of shit that happens from that point.
I mean, it was a 2.5-hour movie. They actually put a lot of detail into the score, that just sort of atmospheric, ambient, synthy thing going on.
That's the only thing I prefer from the 84 movie. I like that score. I hum that score from time to time.
I did too, and I mean, I don't know if they referred to the cost of sending 3 guild navigators, but they didn't really show them.
They kind of did the Bene Gesserit landing on the planet. That was $1 million sequence.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it came out of the Highlander, and you're like, oh, shit, the Bene Gesserit world in style. Look at them. I didn't know they had spaceships. That didn't even come up in the original. They have their own spaceships. The whole, it should really be a HBO series. It really, really, really should.
I really want to see. I would be surprised if it didn't turn into 3 movies.
so much that they have to cut it. The book cuts at that point, too.
Yeah, it does.
When Paul sleeps off into the desert. So, yeah, that was... The difference is this guy actually read the book. I don't think David Lynch ever read the book.
No, I think you're absolutely right. By the way, I love the way that they depicted the personal shields.
What? You could see all the stuff Star Wars stole. At that point, you're like, they stole everything, didn't they? Yes, they did. When the Baron rolls up in his chamber, you're like, that's terrifying. Oh, yeah. My God.
Oh, yeah. And, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have now just entered into the nerd portion of the conversation.
Yes, this is the nerd portion.
No, I got something for you, too, Tracy. That's not the initial reason I called in. The initial reason I called in, when I was either 4 or 5, I got circumcised. I remember that like it was yesterday.
My son did too, and he's still bitter about it. He's so mad at me.
Yeah, oh, I still got feelings. Yes,
he still gives me side eye.
We could have had a talk. We could have talked about what was going on here. We're going to the doctor. I actually was going to the anesthesia. You wake up, oh my God, where are my pants? So, I bring this up because there's nowhere in hell. And Tracy, you got to see Dune. You'll pick up on it. And you'll be in with the nerds. Trust me, you got to see Dune. Two of the greatest characters in it are brothers. You'll love it. You really will. Leah and I for the win. She was awesome. Wow. Anyways, the point is, I can't imagine doing... That's the most pain I've ever had in my life. I can't imagine doing anything like that on purpose.
You probably were not. Did they knock your ass out?
Yes, but I woke up. I knew exactly what had happened. Everything was red and bloody, and it was terrible. And I was like, "Wow, this."
Because I hadn't planned on getting him circumcised, but what had happened was his foreskin hadn't separated all the way. And he kept getting UTIs, so they had to go ahead and circle. He was like 5, and it hurt him. I mean, just a wisp of air hurt, and he was like, I thought he was never going to forgive me. I mean, and then
he knocked
him out. Yeah.
Y'all don't want to see the video I have seen.
No, that's what I'm saying, because you described the video, and way, way long ago in a galaxy far away, I was actually pre-med, so I understand without understanding, and this has to be something deep inside of you, because I'm sure no man, and I'm putting this in quotes, would volunteer to have a foreskin back or have a foreskin taken in their adulthood, So for you to go, hey, and the actual class I took in college was body work, so this is relevant. So for you to go bisect and divide and put this over here on purpose and fight for it, that's the ballsiest thing I've ever heard of, Robin.
Well, thank you.
That's what I consider it. I did, because, those are going away, I guess. The point is, when you get to Alabama, before your surgery, even though it's 5 o'clock in the morning, I want you to hug a tree, because we are supposed to be the tree-hugging contingent.
I hug trees all the time. I do it out in the national park.
Specifically on Monday, though, because based on my superstitious religion, that's the day of the angel of life, and that'll give you a little extra life to get through your surgery, because I got bad feelings about your surgery. I'd be wrong if I didn't state that, and I'm praying hard, especially when you mention blood loss. You're a big guy. Girl. Big frame. Big person.
I think it's going to go great.
Eventually.
I just have to not screw up.
No, this is out of your hands.
Yeah.
You've done what you're supposed to. Now it's to the professionals, and I hope they have a passion for it.
They do. This guy is really good at it. He's got a lot of experience. He was part of a team that did tons of them in Chicago. And then they opened this gender clinic in Birmingham and asked him if he would like to come and be the guy.
Oh, he's from Chicago. Okay, I feel a little, I feel a little bit better because I'm in this.
Actually, he's from he is from East Tennessee.
Okay.
And
this is kind of skillful. So I went to school at East Tennessee, so now I'm getting nervous again.
No. Trained medical school, or went, undergrad was somewhere in North Carolina, went to the UT Medical School, you know, all the, you know, the residencies and everything, and he's a fellow of whatever it is, reconstructive urologists, and like lots and lots and lots of work in Chicago, and he's done a good number of them down there, and he, you know, he went through all the, you know, he went through all the possible complications with me and went, never had that, because one of the nice things is with the robot they get a greater degree of accuracy.
Oh yeah, no, I'm aware. I lost 5 people to the medical system in the last 2 years. This year, which is, I hope, 22 doesn't go. You thought 21 was that? 220. I lost everything this year. Everything. Finally got an apartment. Was homeless for a little bit. Didn't care because I was in so much grief. And the only thing that I hung on to was your show. So, to take a paragraph to say a sentence, me, we, Tracy, everyone, we can't lose you.
Not gonna. And as soon as I wake up and I'm enough to myself, I will send out probably a horrifyingly embarrassing photograph of, you know, me.
It's just not too explicit. Just, you know, save some of the mystery, darling.
Remember, the groovy gown ties in the back, so, you know, I don't have to worry.
I'm happy for you. I told my brother a couple of days ago, I don't have any dreams after this year, but I have your dream, so I can hang on to that for a little bit. And this whole process has been amazing. I mean, this is literally one of the last things me and Carolyn talked about. I remember that show. We had our ear to the TV. We had your cast on the TV, and it was great radio. It really was. So with that said,
it makes me smile. I mean, is there a tropical storm coming, or is that just a night in South Florida? Is that windy?
That's the actual turnpike you hear, our 12-lane monster, which is about a mile away from me.
Aha.
Yeah. Okay. My new spot. Which, this show made me notice something the last couple of days. I live in a predominantly Caribbean and brown area. I've never felt safer. I never used to think about things like that. I used to, if there was one strange black guy in the neighborhood, it was me. People go, oh, he's not so bad. The talk's kind of funny, but we can, you know. And because of everything that's happened, because of, you know, some crazy person, because the truck's only 30 miles up the road, the lifted trucks with the guns and everything, if they came through and started shooting people, a lot of people would start shooting back. I guess that's a pre-Civil War mindset. I don't know. I don't know why anybody would purposely try to quit.
I get it.
Go ahead.
No, I had a lovely note from Jude. She sends along from time to time these beautiful quotes from the Sufi poet Rumi. Some human beings are safe havens. Be companions with them. And Jude says, and I am grateful for all of you. The three of you are perfect examples this day. Thank you, Jude. Thank you. But I'm glad you didn't wait till 8:05, Jerry. I'm glad you jumped in, and I'm so happy to hear from you. And
I hope and pray I hear from you again. And if I don't, thank you for everything you've added to my life.
Well, you will. Among other things, there will be a couple of programs next week.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you coming back with the necessary upgrades, breathing, and spitting and pissing.
That is not.
I want you to be.
That's not going to change.
Okay.
No, that's not going
to
change.
I want you to be okay.
I'm going to be okay. I am going to be so okay. I'm going to be okayer than I have ever been before.
I'm pulling for you.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
You're my okay surrogate at this point. And I'll just deal with that. Miss Tracy, you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm just listening to you talk. I'm just talking, listening, so I'm cool. I'm about to call in order.
Wow, barbecue. I'm a vegetarian, but that sounds good. I can make some great barbecue fake meat. I think I may go off on that room.
Okay, but you had something for Tracy.
Shit. You said the sunken place. The sunken place, is that in the movie Get Out, or what movie is that in?
Get Out.
Did they Get Out? Everybody told me I should watch it. I'm doing a lot less.
You haven't watched Get Out, really? Okay.
My daughter said, "Watch Get Out." She's mixed, and I was like, "Why?"
You are now turning
in your
black card. I am done with you.
My black card is tattooed to my ass. You cannot take my black card away.
No,
if they start shooting black people, we all run it together, okay?
Nope.
All right. Maybe I'm on a Tracy temporary suspension, so I'm going to have to go watch that report later.
If it's suspended, I will not revoke it. Okay, it is under temporary suspension.
Okay.
Yeah, and you
it's under consideration.
And you need to understand something. You don't have Scott privilege, so you don't get to put off watching it for like a year.
Right. No.
I'll probably when I get home from work, I'll probably do that.
As a matter of fact, if I wasn't going out of town this weekend, they're showing. Well, I might be back home. No, I'm not going to. But they're actually doing a full orchestral performance of it with the choir that sang in it at this really cool hotel downtown L.A. that has the Ace Theater and it has Ace Hotel Theater. And if I wasn't going out of town, I would be there.
Keenan or somebody like that directed that? Is that who directed it? One of the Keenan Pell? Yeah. He did a Twilight Zone episode. He did a Twilight Zone episode on that little thing they did.
He did a couple of years ago on Paramount Plus. He did eight episodes of the Twilight Zone.
Did you see any of those?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Yeah, they were pretty good.
You saw the one with the trooper, the state trooper that kept following the mom and the daughter? That was terrifying. Where she kept time jumping, and no matter what she did, the result was the same. That was as good as the black and whites. It really was. I was like, this is Twilight Zone. Where the 2000 version is like, well, these are just good stories, but it's not Twilight Zone, if that makes any sense. See, he nailed it.
It was every black mother's fear. It freaked me out took me to a whole other level of freak out watching that. I'm like,
just this on the way out the door, you know, Americans behaving badly. An American Airlines flight from New York to California.
Oh yeah.
Had to make an emergency landing in Denver because some asshole decided to assault a flight attendant.
Oh, jeez.
And the CEO of Doug Parker, said, the bad behavior has to stop and the best deterrent is aggressive criminal prosecution.
No, we're not going to do that. He's wearing a red hat.
Yeah, it's okay if you got the red hat on, right?
Where we live.
And just one last thing on the way out the door. Facebook's parent corporation has a new name.
Meta something?
Meta.
Yeah, of course.
And the first thing I thought of was the line from, what was it? Mean Girls.
Right.
Gretchen stopped trying to make Fetch happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Zucker Dweeb stopped trying to make Meta happen.
Actually, first thing I thought it was the sky was the color of television tuned to a dead channel, which is the first line from Neuromancer. It feels very dysphoric and dystopian, to be honest with you.
I have never read that. I've got to. Maybe I'll put that on the flat on my back list.
That's a flat on your back book, and you'll be done with it in like 3 hours, and then you'll be like, I hope Denis Villeneuve works on this, because that's an unfilmable movie as well. Almost as good as Dune, and it's just one book. Oh, and one more thing, Ted Lasso made me cry. Thank you for the recommendation.
So you watched it?
Ted Lasso made me cry. For so many reasons.
Oh, I have one thing. I have one thing for Brother Deacon Asa, because now he has the curious. The other day, he said that he found in the archives the very first show that I called in on, so now I need to know when it was, so I can.
Oh, he's working on it. It's going to take a lot of digging, but I messaged him last night.
Yeah, because I got to hear it. I got to hear, and I cannot believe that it's been 10 years. That is just wow.
Your voice sounded so much different, Bob. It was crazy. It's crazy how different your voice sounded. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear. Not so much me. I want to compare how you sounded 10 years ago. As to now, because of now that you're your actual authentic self and all that good stuff.
Oh, wait till done. Wait till I'm done with speech therapy.
Oh, now that's going to be even more amazing.
The craziest thing is you could hear the anger in your voice, Robin. You could hear the anger.
It was there. It still is. I just express it differently.
It's still there, but it's a different level. It's softer.
Yeah.
I just want to hear how if I'm still as angry black woman, if the angry black woman, what the level is.
You were both angry, and then I shut it off because I was like, "No life, Bob. No, I'm sad," and I went to work. But you're part of all of. You're a part of all our lives, Robin. Intricately and intimately.
Thank you, Jerry.
So take care of yourself. Blessings to all your physicians, nurses, even the guy that cleans the toilet.
Oh, especially.
Especially the people who clean and do all that stuff. They're the most important.
Keep the place together. They keep the place together. And thank the warrior princess, because without her, none of this has happened. And she needs to hear it out loud.
Yeah, you talk about the anger. Asa said, you sounded like you were hiding hazelnuts in your cheeks.
Walnuts, not hazelnuts, walnuts.
Well, listen, y'all have a great evening. I gotta run a quick errand. And we'll get back to it with Friday on the front porch. I'm so glad you called in, Jerry and Tracy. I'm glad you called in too. We had some great conversations this evening with Kevin and Dave.
And now I have homework.
Yes.
Now I have homework.
Indeed.
So take care, y'all. I'm off to work. God bless all of you. And hug your tree, Robin.
I'm gonna hug a tree. I'm gonna hug a bunch of them.
I'm going to go. I'm going to go barbecue. All right, so I'll
see you,
talk to y'all later.
All right. Enjoy the barbecue, Tracy. Love you.
Love you, too.
Bye. Now. And so here we are having come to the end of this program. It's been fantastic. I've enjoyed it immensely. I enjoy them so much. So we've got $190 remaining on Rico's challenge, the Out and Proud in the Berg challenge. Deberg challenge. Hopefully that'll get knocked down some overnight, and then if we have to finish it off on Friday on the front porch, we will do that. Thanks to each and every one of you, our Patreon and PayPal subscribers, who with your kind subscriptions help keep this effort going. Thank you to our a la carte contributors, each and every one of you. Taken together, it is still a merry little band that makes all this happen. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this little experiment and conversation in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggles for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now a union shop. Like I said earlier, please reach out. Please reach out to your member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine. Get your booster. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer liberally, regularly. Take it everywhere with you. Wear your mask. Maintain your social distance. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, I talked to him in the Oval Office and they said blanket pardons were on the way, avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.